this once again. Is the modern state of Israel really connected with biblical Israel? Does God still bless those who bless modern Israel?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, you hear it all the time. Well, God blesses those who bless Israel, and we should stand with Israel. We should bless Israel, and America's blessed because we stand with Israel. Is that true? Is that just some kind of myth based on a misunderstanding of Genesis 12:3? We've talked about it before here on The Line of Fire, but I want to revisit it and ask the larger question today. Modern state of Israel, does it really bear a connection with biblical Israel? And do those promises still stand? This is Michael Brown. Welcome to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Here's the number to call with any Jewish-related question you have, Hebrew-related, Israel-related. And yes, even though we've been talking about Islam a lot on other days, if it ties in with Islam, we'll take some questions potentially as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And remember, you don't need to agree with me theologically, politically, and other ways. You don't need to agree with me to call. In fact, we welcome calls from those who differ and have a differing perspective. The only thing I'd request is this. You don't have to be stealth about it. In other words, if you have a genuine disagreement, you can feel free to put it on the table. You can feel free to say, hey, I differ with you. You can do it because you respect me and love me, or you can do it because you think I'm an ignoramus. Doesn't matter why you differ. That's your business. But sometimes folks will ask a particular kind of question, and the question is so misleading that by the time I'm done answering the question and getting around the whole dialogue, then I find out why the person really called, and we're kind of out of time. So you don't have to be stealth about it. You could ask honestly, and if you want to ask in a way that's not leading, that's perfectly fine, but feel free to call in with disagreements. Yeah, I solicit it all the time. I don't get it a lot. You say, well, you control the mic. Yeah, I do. It is my show, and I'm also responsible to our listeners to be conscientious in terms of the types of calls that are on and how long the calls go. And if someone's just yelling at me and they won't listen, then obviously it's not good radio. It's not conducive to interaction. I do control the mic, but trust me, I'm a guest on other people's shows all the time. And I'm a guest on shows where the host differs with me. All right? In other words, they control the mic. And I engage sometimes in debates. Someone will say we'd like to moderate a debate. Sometimes they're neutral. Sometimes they're not. I'm talking about on radio. But if I can at least get my point of view in, if at least I could get someone to understand something that's important to me or raise an issue, a question, fine. So they dominated the time and they controlled the mic. But I had an open door at least to get my viewpoint in, whereas otherwise it wasn't there at all. Come on, wouldn't you rather you're watching whatever news you're watching and you disagree with the panel, all right, and it's all slanted in one direction, be it to the left or to the right, and you're watching that, and you just would like someone who represented your viewpoint to be on there, and if the person was outnumbered, and if the person was ganged up on, and if they weren't given full opportunity to speak, all the more does it expose the other side because they wouldn't even give an opportunity for someone to be heard. And the little bit that was heard, at least you say, yeah, I finally got my viewpoint out. So I practice exactly what I'm encouraging you to do. In many settings, I don't control the mic, all right? But if I have an open door to get my viewpoint out, I take advantage of it as something good, as something positive. So my invitation stands. We come back. We're going to look at some scripture. Jewish news, always a lot to cover right here on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on The Line of Fire.
Give us strength.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, it is not just America that needs a gospel-based moral and cultural and spiritual revolution. Much of the world needs, well, the whole world needs it until Jesus returns and sets up his kingdom here on the earth. But before we look at scripture, before we get into the question of does God still bless those who bless Israel, and is there a strong and vital link between biblical Israel and the modern people of Israel today? This story from the UK. Now, I had been advised of this a few days ago by a Jewish friend of mine, not a believer in Jesus. A Jewish friend of mine wanted me to know about this, and now it's being reported widely on other sites here on LifeSiteNews.com. So this out of England yesterday. Are you ready? UK threatens to close Jewish school for not teaching three-year-olds about transgenderism. I am not making that up. This is not fake news. I read the initial report sent to me by a Jewish friend, and they were interacting about it based on the primary sources, what actually happened behind the scenes. So as it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, I'm going to share this news with you. Are you listening? Remember, I've always told you for years now that those on the radical left and LGBT activists and others will overplay their hand, that just having things accepted, redefining marriage, no, that's not enough. You've got to embrace, you've got to celebrate it. But I'm religious, I'm Muslim, I'm Jewish, I'm Christian, I don't agree with it. It doesn't matter. You must participate, you must celebrate, you must be part of. We will not allow your bigotry to stand. That's where it ultimately goes. So, an Orthodox Jewish primary school is violating the law by not teaching three-year-olds about, quote, gender reassignment and sexual orientation, a government inspection determined. The Vishnitz Girls' School teaches 212 girls as young as 3 and as old as 11. An unannounced May 10th government inspection determined it's not in compliance with 2010 equality legislation. Now, isn't it funny? I mentioned to you, in keeping with the theme of our broadcast, the words moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. And here you have the words spiritual, moral, social, and cultural in this next sentence. So, according to the report, it's detrimental to the, quote, spiritual, moral, social, and cultural development of children to not explain gender assignment and sexual orientation to them, the report said. Quote, the school's approach means that pupils are shielded from learning about certain differences between people, such as sexual orientation. Quote, leaders and proprietors recognize the requirement to teach about the protected characteristics as set out in the Equality Act 2010, but acknowledge that they do not teach pupils about all the protected characteristics, particularly those relating to gender reassignment and sexual orientation. This means that pupils have a limited understanding of the different lifestyles and partnerships that individuals may choose in present-day society. Oh, gosh. And remember, friends, this is a religious Jewish school, okay? This is a school training religious Jewish kids, educating religious Jewish kids, here girls aged 3 to 11. The school's mission, according to the report, is, quote, to deliver a high-class education that is firmly based on the principles of the Torah and combined with a strong chol curriculum, chol meaning secular, to enable all pupils to become productive and upstanding citizens. What do you say? If you do, you cannot have a religious exemption here. You cannot, in a religious school, in a religious Jewish school, a traditional Jewish school, you cannot say, we don't want to teach 3 and 4 year olds, or 11 year olds for that matter, that two women having a romantic and sexual relationship or two men having a romantic and sexual relationship is part of society and is acceptable. Oh, they could teach it and say it's happening in the society, but we condemn it. That wouldn't line up with the equality rules, right? They could say this is happening in the world and this is what happens when people get away from Torah. No, that would be teaching bigotry and bias. You must teach it in a positive way. You must teach it in an enlightened way. And notice, you must. Extraordinary. Just extraordinary. What if they don't want to tell a 4-year-old child or an 11-year-old child that some people are really boys trapped in girls' bodies or girls trapped in boys' bodies? And therefore, it's important for them to identify accordingly and also throw out the Torah legislation that says it's detestable in God's sight for a man to dress as a woman or a woman as a man. No, that's hateful. Look, there's a school in Canada where the government's tried to tell them, has told them, you can't, if in your teaching and curriculum, you can't use certain verses from the Bible because we consider them hateful. We've always told you this was coming. When I say always, I mean for years now. We've told you this was coming. There is no surprise whatsoever. No surprise. So, friends, listen to me. It is not far at all from this coming to Christian schools in America. If it can happen to a Christian school in Canada, if it can happen to a religious Jewish school in Great Britain, it could happen to a Christian school in America. There are Christian colleges, seminaries that have come under pressure with accreditation issues because of their standards. Why can't it happen in a Christian school? There's every reason why it can. And who's to say it won't happen if you're homeschooling? Does that sound any more extreme than this junk would have sounded 10 years ago? 866-348-7884. Thank God I can sit behind the mic and share some of these things, because otherwise I want to write about 5 articles a day. So much crazy stuff happening in the world around us. 866-348-7884 if you have a Jewish or Hebrew-related question. Let's first ask the bigger question about Israel today. Yeah, we've revisited this. We're going to do it again because I keep seeing the same things coming up on posts and comments. Now, I'm assuming that the people posting and commenting have not heard me teach on this at length, not studied the issues at length, and not read what I've written about it. But with the hope that some will be listening, I'm going to address these things again. And I want to say plainly that, yes, there is a direct line connecting the ancient Israelites and the modern state of Israel. There is a direct line connecting ancient Israel and those living in Israel today saying that they are Jews. Are some of them the product of intermarriage? No question, of course. You could not possibly have all the different ethnicities represented and the different skin colors and characteristics if there had not been intermarriage. But in every one of these cases, it is intermarriage into Judaism. Just like Ruth marrying Boaz and then becoming part of the line of David, or Rahab becoming part of the people of Israel and making her way into the genealogy of Jesus, as Ruth does in Matthew, the first chapter. So there's no question that there has been intermarriage, but you've had that all along. You have Moses marrying a Cushite woman, all right? You have intermarriage there. So the thing is, if there was intermarriage into the people of Israel, into the Jewish faith, so that now they identified with the rest of the people, then A, it is accepted, and B, the bloodline still continues. Yes, It is not a pure bloodline where it is only descendants of the 12 tribes of Jacob, the 12 sons of Jacob, but it's never been a totally and perfectly sound bloodline. There has been intermarriage with Canaanites and others, but here's what you have to realize. When you intermarry out, when you intermarry outside the faith, outside your people, and then become part of the nations, lose your Jewish identity, Israelite heritage, you're gone for history, okay? So 10 tribes scattered abroad, much intermarriage, many of the people lost to history. But when you intermarry in, you become part of the larger people. And yes, we can have a direct bloodline connection between the people in Israel identifying as Jews today and the ancient Israelites. We'll continue. Stay with us.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being part of our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Michael Brown here, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question you have of any kind, Hebrew-related question relating to the Messiahship of Jesus, Yeshua. Maybe you've seen a rabbi or counter-missionary present something attacking the New Testament, attacking our faith, and you have a question. Very glad to help you with answering those questions. 866-348-7884. And if you're a Jewish person listening and you differ with me, or a Muslim listening and you differ with me, I'm so glad you're listening. First, thank you. Thank you. All right, I do appreciate that. I'm glad you give me the time and you do listen. That being said, feel free to call with your honest question or your criticism of what I believe, and we can interact. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. All right. So what I often hear these days, and it's not a new lie or a new myth or a new story. It's something that I hear with some frequency, and it says this. Today's Jews are not really Jews. They're not really Jews. Rather, they are descendants of the Khazars. This was a kingdom that would have been more European in its background or closer to that. And oh, what, about 1,200 years ago, converted to Judaism. And that is the bulk of what we call the Jewish people today. All right, that's the line. Of course, it's a myth. The Khazars did convert, but it was not this massive number of people, number one. Number two, it only makes up a small percentage. Well, it makes up a small percentage of the overall Jewish population. And when DNA testing is done on Jews today, it is found that the great majority do not trace back to the Khazar kingdom or that part of the world. And some, for example, who have the last name Cohen or Levi, and Cohen in particular, that may well trace back to the high priest Aaron, who was the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, all right? So Kohen is priest, and that's how you get the name Cohen. That many people with the last name Cohen actually trace back to Aaron and his descendants. Or Levi, trace back to the tribe of Levi. But in particular with the Aaronites, it has been found that many of them share the same DNA and trace back to a common ancestry that would well trace them back to Aaron. This is well known and attested. So you have to realize that there is DNA evidence supporting these things. Not only so, the Jewish people also know their track record. Know where they have been scattered. We can trace things historically. This group went from here to here to here to here to here. There was intermarriage here or settled here. Now, some of it's lost in history. And then you'll have a tribe like the Lemba tribe in Zimbabwe. And do they connect? Here they are. They're African, right? They look different than I look. And are we both legitimately descended from Israel? And the answer is yes. Sometimes DNA tests have been done. And yes, you can actually trace them back. So that's why you have black Jews and white Jews and yellow Jews, right, to use your larger color patterns here. That's why this all happens. Now, let me go a little bit further. One of the poorest, weakest, most easily refuted, yet often used arguments of the black Hebrew Israelite movement is that they alone have suffered the curses of Deuteronomy 28. Now, it's an odd thing to boast of your identity by saying, look at how cursed we've been. It's a very odd thing to do. And someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I was not aware of black Hebrew Israelites, say, during World War II, going to Europe and saying, we're the real Jews, kill us. Well, I was not aware of that. I've not been aware of black Hebrew Israelites in times where Jewish people were suffering severe persecution and were being herded up and killed simply for being Jews, that they were saying, hey, kill us, we're the real Jews. So correct me, please. Some black Hebrew Israelites listen to the show. Correct me if I'm wrong. Tell me when you were going to Europe and saying, hey, we're the real Jews. If you want to kill anybody, kill us. Just want to be clear on that. But not only so. And yes, there are legitimate black Jews. There are. Just as there are legitimate white Jews. There are. And some of us can trace things very far back. All right? But let's put that aside for the moment. This idea that the black race, we are the real Israelites because we have been cursed more than anyone and suffered more than anyone. Well, actually, in terms of a universal hatred around the world, Jewish people have been more singled out than anyone else. Okay? You have a whole continent which is primarily black, all right, and where there's black privilege versus white privilege over most all of the continent because it's almost all black. You don't have that with Jews. You don't have that with Jews in history. All right? And you have different countries where blacks have led and ruled, like Egypt, over a period of time. And I know it's oversimplifying, say, black-white, but I'm just doing it for obvious purposes here, interacting with certain polemics. But we turn around and say, well, okay, let's look at the blessings and blessed here. Why focus on the curses? But one of the big arguments that's raised is look at the end of Deuteronomy 28, that you'll be sent off in ships to Egypt. You'll be sent off to other places. Look at that. And here we were, blacks from Africa, sent off in ships in slavery to America and elsewhere. Deuteronomy 28 refers to me. Now, actually, I believe that blacks and Jews have a lot in common and that we can relate a lot because we're both people here in America, African-Americans and Jews worldwide, we're both liberated slaves, and we both have been oppressed peoples. And I think there's a lot that can join us together. And I always feel a very special connection to my black brothers and sisters in the Lord, very deep and special spiritual connection. And it seems a deep soul connection in a positive way. But in point of fact, Jews have been shipped off in ships. Yeah, it's not a big thing historically. With the fall of Jerusalem to the Romans, not once but twice in 70 and then in 135, Jews were shipped off. I was just reading a book by one of my friends, and he was talking about ancestors, you know, distant ancestors sent off in ships by the Romans, Jews, into slavery. And from what we can tell, the Assyrians did the same thing with the fall of northern Israel. Part of their dispersion of the 10 northern tribes would have been with Phoenician ships and other things like that, sending our ancestors, my ancestors, off into captivity in ships. So it didn't happen to us. It's not a big deal in terms of, well, it never happened. No, it did happen. It happened to us, part of our history of suffering. All right, we'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Set me as a seal upon your heart. Fill me. Those words were just going through my mind over and over from Song of Songs, Song of Solomon. Nice to hear them sung again on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here in the Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Number to call. I would have taken some calls already, but the calls were not Jewish-related or callers were calling within too short of a period of time. We always like to have a break between calls of at least a couple of weeks to be fair to others. But I will get to some calls. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. So we go back again to the question. We go back to the simple question. Is the modern state of Israel today connected to the ancient Jewish people? We can say absolutely yes, especially when you realize it has often been difficult to be Jewish. It's not the kind of thing that through most of our history was popular and everybody was clamoring to be Jewish, right? Everybody clamoring to be Jewish and therefore, you know, hey, this is the cool thing and let's just do it. You have a time in the book of Esther where there's a turning to the Jewish people as God raises up Mordecai and God vindicates his people and destroys Haman and the opposition. But through much of our history, this has not been the most popular thing. Yes, there has been Jewish proselytism at times where Jews reached out to others. Jesus talked about the Pharisees and their zeal to make one convert. But for the most part, number one, Judaism requires a lot, okay? Judaism requires a lot of people. It has lots of laws and standards and commandments. And if you convert to Judaism, you're obligated to keep it all, okay? And that's the first thing. The second thing is Jews have often been persecuted through history. And the idea of wanting to become Jewish has not been that popular. That's why there are only 13, 14 million people in the world today that are Jewish or known to be Jewish. Maybe the numbers are higher in God's sight in terms of who he sees and identifies, but in terms of what we know. So as we look at our history in the Muslim world and see where we lived as second-class citizens, and by the way, sometimes in the Muslim world, we lived better than we lived in the Christian world, and sometimes the reverse, because the church often ruled by the sword in a hypocritical way as well, okay? So we know those realities. But as we look through history, we can trace our history. We can trace where we've been scattered. We have records from different nations and documents of when we were here or there. There's also archaeological proof of where we were at this time or that time. And yes, we've been scattered around the world, hence pockets of Jews that don't look the same as others, different parts of the world, but they're part of the Jewish communities being scattered, intermarrying, but maintaining their faith and practice, okay? So we can pretty well trace things back and keep going back from generation to generation to generation to generation, and we can see where we've been and where we've been scattered and how we've been regathered, all right? So in a physical and genealogical and biological way, we can say, yes, modern state of Israel connects back to biblical Israel. Now, the bigger questions are spiritual. The bigger questions are now spiritual questions. Does that mean promises still apply? Does that mean God still deals with Israel as a nation? Those are the things we need to tackle, and we will on the other side of the break.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for being part of the Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question you have of any kind, happy to take your call. Let me just, I just want to check here real quick. All right, yeah, wrong screen. Right screen. Here we go. Okay, I just wanted to be absolutely sure that nobody was posting questions for me on Twitter and places like that. So just checking to be sure about that. Yep, good. Okay, because yesterday I let people post questions for David Wood. I wanted to make sure that they weren't posting questions rather than calling in with their questions. Can I tell you something very interesting? The video of mine that is the most viewed in the last month or so is my little video on why the Book of Enoch is not in the Bible. Yeah. Uh-huh. Why the Book of Enoch is not in the Bible. Obviously, on a pretty minor level overall, you'd think, but people are weighing in. I mean, they're passionate. They are really exercised over this, and it should be in the Bible, and it's been excluded for these reasons. People are keeping it out. It's conspiracy, and this. I mean, it's interesting to see. And I just spotted the other day, we reposted it, and I thought, look at that. It's got like 60,000 views and this passionate discussion going both ways on it over the Book of Enoch, whether it should be in the Bible or not. So it's interesting. There's so much passion. If you haven't watched it, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on Enoch, and you'll be able to watch. If you want to weigh in on the discussion, just click on the link to take you right to YouTube, and that's where most of the discussion is taking place. But the video, of course, right up on our website. So let's go back to some of the spiritual questions. Did God break his covenant with Israel, or Israel broke the covenant with the Lord, because of which God said, I'm done with Israel. I'm making a new covenant with the nation. I'm done with Israel. I'm making a new covenant with the nation. And this covenant now is not just for Jew or Gentile. This covenant is for the whole world. So God is no longer, according to this view, God is no longer dealing with Israel as a nation. Individual Jews can be saved. Individual Jews can always be saved. That's not the issue. However, God is not dealing with the Jewish people as a nation. Is there any scriptural support for that? No. Absolutely, certainly not. Why do I say it? Because God categorically put his reputation on the line and said that Israel would remain as a nation, as a people before him, no matter what. No matter what sin Israel committed. We would be disciplined, we would be judged, but we would not be destroyed. You say, Mike, how could you read so much and be so stupid? You don't get it? The church is now Israel. The promises continue. No, friend, that is treachery. That is lying. That is God saying one thing and meaning another. I'll give you an example. Let's say that you are Sam Smith, and I make a promise to you, Sam Smith, because I love you and because I appreciate your heart for God. I am now making a promise to you. And here's my promise. No matter what you do, no matter what your children do, no matter what your grandchildren do, your great-grandchildren, no matter what they do, whether you follow God or not, whether you like me or not, no matter what you do, I am putting money in an account, a lasting legacy account, that every one in your family, when they get to college age, whatever school they want to go to, I will pay for their tuition. And this will be put in an account in perpetuum. So this will last for generations. This is my abiding promise to the Smith family, no matter what. Well, then 5 years later, Sam Smith, you do something that I don't like. You do something that upsets me. And I now turn around to the Jones family and say, you are now the Smith family. Well, that's duplicitous. That's talking out of two sides of my mouth. That's me making a categorical, unconditional promise and now changing the recipient of that promise. That now has changed an unconditional promise into a conditional promise. So you tell me if there's any other way to read these words. You say, well, what are you going to quote from the Old Testament? Well, that's the whole point. If the New Testament could come along and change what the Old Testament said, then you reject the New Testament, right? Didn't Yeshua say, I didn't come to abolish the law of the prophets, but to fulfill? Isn't that the whole way that you test things, by the word? So if Jesus came along and said, the Sabbath is now the fourth day of the week and adultery is fine, then the Jewish people would say, I don't care how many miracles you work, you're not the Messiah. Rightly so. So you tell me how to change it. And by the way, I'll give you New Testament verses as well. You say, we're going to give me the same old verses? Well, if it's the same old truth, yes. Does it ever get old if you quote John 14:6, that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life? Well, you quote that a lot. Well, is it any less true? Acts 4:12, there's no other name given under heaven among men by which we must be saved? Well, you quote that a lot. Well, is it any less true because you quote it a lot? Jesus is coming again. Well, I hear that a lot. Well, is it any less true because we say it a lot? Why do we have to keep coming up with new verses if you reject the first ones? Well, I heard that before. Well, it's true, though. Come on. Let's be serious here. Why do I have to come up with a new proof if the first proof is adequate? Okay? The doctor says, take this medicine and you'll be fine in a week. Well, you gave me that prescription already. Did you take the medicine? No. What? Take the medicine, you'll be fine in a week. Yeah, but I don't like that. Well, it works. This is the medicine that works. Okay? Well, you know, guy's thinking of leaving his wife and shacking up with somebody else. What does the Bible say? It says, don't commit adultery. Well, I don't like it. Give me another verse. No, I don't have to give you another verse. That verse is enough. So how about this? Jeremiah 31, we start in verse 31. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. So this is talking about the Sinai covenant. For this is the covenant that I will make with the church, and I will exclude Israel. Sorry, that's not what it says. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. The new covenant was made with whom? Jews, the house of Israel. And because the Jewish people have been given as a light to the world, and the Messiah is the light of the world, this covenant now is extended to the whole world, but it's a covenant given to the Jewish people. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, declares the Lord, I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. No longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord, for I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. We've received the first fruits of that covenant, but we will see the full realization of that in the millennial kingdom. All right, now, new covenant with the house of Israel. So God wants us to be absolutely sure that we understand there's a new covenant with the house of Israel, but it is not a new people. It is not a new house of Israel. Here's what comes immediately after, verse 35. Thus says the Lord, who gives the sun for light by day, and the fixed order of the moon, and the stars for light by night, who stirs up the sea so that its waves roar. The Lord of hosts is his name. If this fixed order of what? Moon, stars, sun. If this fixed order departs from before me, declares the Lord, then shall the offspring of Israel cease from being a nation before me forever. I tell you what, I want everyone to check real quickly. If you're listening live in the States, go outside. You see the sun out there? Is the sun shining? Yeah, okay. You're listening another part of the world. It's nighttime. Is the moon out there? Stars. Okay, those are still there. God says, if this fixed order departs from before me, which it has not, declares the Lord, then shall the offspring of Israel cease from being a nation before me forever. You say, yeah, but what if Israel sins? Verse 37, thus says the Lord, if the heavens above can be measured and the foundations of the earth below can be explored, then I will cast off all the offspring of Israel for all that they have done, declares the Lord. Have the heavens been measured? Have the foundations of the earth been explored? No, no. Then God will not cast off all the offspring of Israel for what we've done. God said it. God said it.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, okay. This is exciting. This is exciting. Yeah. Okay, I absolutely am eager to check this out. Okay, I've had some files sent to me, and I'm going to look at these. Oh, yikes. It's going to be hours after radio before I'm free, but I cannot wait to look on these footage from Israel. Just sent a link so I can download hundreds of gigabytes of files or megabytes of files. Okay, yeah. Let's do this. I'm telling this thing, let's go for it and add the information here. Okay. I am eager to download these files. It is footage that was shot in Israel, and talking to Israelis from secular to religious about Yeshua, about the Messiah, about relevant issues. And we are going to be using this footage and interacting with these Israelis on a series of broadcasts that will get into every home in Israel with cable TV. Yeah, on a major network there. And we'll have Hebrew captions. We've been talking about this for months and finally ready to move forward. A special studio has been built that we're going to be using, and I cannot wait. I can't. Hey, I'm doing radio, so you got to wait to find out what the footage looks like, just like I do. But I just got an email saying that it's here. So very, very cool. I cannot wait to download this, to get into it, to watch it, and to then put shows together around these comments. So I hope you understand, friends, that the principle is when God speaks unconditionally, when he says, I swear by myself, as he did to Abraham, as Hebrews said, there's no one higher he could swear by. When he explicitly lays things out, say Genesis 15, makes a covenant with Abram and is the only one to pass between the sacrificial pieces. Again, if you're not familiar with this ancient Near Eastern custom, animals would be cut down the middle, so just bloody, gory, and then the pieces put on either side of a path that you would then walk through. Let's say two kings made a treaty. And you would, that both kings would walk through those pieces. Jeremiah 34 refers to it as the covenant of the cutting of the pieces. And Genesis 15 lays it out, what it looks like in detail. You'd both walk through and you'd invoke the gods, the deities that you worshiped. May I be like this. May my people be like these torn carcasses if we violate the treaty. It was a solemn oath. But in Genesis 15, God puts Abram to sleep. And only God, in the form of a blazing torch, God passes through, this blazing fire pot. God passes through the pieces. And it is where he gives the land promise to Abram. And then, if you go over to Psalm 105, tell me if God could have made this more clear. Now, you're going to say, well, wait a second. Then God gave the Sinai covenant, and under the Sinai Covenant, Jewish people were scattered around the world and judged? Yes. But what does Paul tell us in Galatians 3? That the law, the Torah, which was 430 years after the promise, and God reiterated the promise to Abraham again in his lifetime, then to Isaac, then to Jacob, that the land would be theirs as a lasting possession. That the law, which is after the promise, cannot nullify the promise. So for a certain season, certain conditions were put on things, because of which Israel suffered much and was scattered and exiled, but the promise still remains. And so at any point, God can bring the people back. Let me ask you this before I read from Psalm 105. Did God's sovereignty stop in the 20th century? No, I don't believe in God's sovereignty in the same way that a Calvinist does, but I am far closer to a Calvinist belief in God's sovereignty than to a secular view. I mean, I'm night and day closer, meaning that God is at work in the midst of history and that God is ordering events, and that it's not just people doing whatever they want and the devil raging and God sitting back thinking, oh, I wish it was different. I hate the way the world is today. That Trump guy is president and that Putin character and ISIS, I wish I could do something about it, but I can't because I'm only God. No, that's not the God of the Bible. God sits on the throne and rules and reigns. Yes, he lets people make choices. And yes, he's given certain freedom to the devil. But in the midst of it, he's carrying out a plan. And at any point that he so desires, he can say, enough of this, I'm doing this. Even if we don't deserve it, even if we're not worthy. That's why in healing meetings, sometimes it's the unbeliever that gets healed. Why? Because God's sovereign. He can heal whom he wants. I believe he'll keep his promises to his people. But he can heal someone that doesn't deserve it in any way, or none of us deserve it in that sense, but is a complete unbeliever. So you're telling me that the rearranging of the Middle East in the 20th century had nothing to do with God? You're telling me that the one who sets up kings and removes kings has nothing to do with who's ruling today? You're saying he had no involvement whatsoever either way in the Holocaust, either in bringing judgment? If you say not that, then delivering his people from satanic attack, he had nothing to do from any perspective with that? And that the regathering of the Jewish people back to land just happened? That's pretty far-fetched. Psalm 105. He remembers, verse 8, he remembers his covenant forever. The word that he commanded for 1,000 generations. The covenant that he made with Abraham, his sworn promise to Isaac, which he confirmed to Jacob as a statute, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, to you, I will give the land of Canaan as your portion for an inheritance. All right. How else could God have said it more plainly, more clearly? Can I ask you? How else could he have said it more plainly or more clearly than that? What can I say? I mean, I've been through the verses before. Read them again, and then remember what Paul says in Galatians, the 3rd chapter. I'll read it to you. And then the second hour, I'm gonna take this a little bit further and stay in the New Testament with some verses. But look what Paul writes, Galatians chapter 3. He says, and first he's explaining in a homiletical way that it's not to offsprings, many, which is a word you wouldn't even use in Hebrew or in English, offsprings, rather to one offspring who is Messiah. So the promises ultimately culminated in the Messiah. But now he makes clear the law, which came 430 years afterward, does not annul a covenant previously ratified by God so as to make the promise void. And what was the covenant? That the physical land would be given to the physical people of Israel. Not because of our goodness, but because of God's goodness. Not because of our reputation, but because of his reputation. All right, friends, I'm out of time, but I do have time to make this announcement. I've only got 2 more days to take advantage of this fabulous offer. We want to send out to as many of you as possible a fabulous book on reaching Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses, practical, edifying, educational. All right? Cult Shock. It sells for $16.99. It's 250 pages. But your gift of any size, we'll send it to you as our thank you gift. But here's what you need to do. Go to AskDrBrown.org today and click on the special offer on the homepage.
Once again, is the modern state of Israel really connected with biblical Israel? Does God still bless those who bless modern Israel?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is my great joy to be with you today. This is Michael Brown, and I am delighted to spend this time with you on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And on this day, if you've got a Jewish-related question of any kind, Hebrew-related, related to the modern state of Israel, related to Messianic prophecy, I'd love to hear from you. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. Some items in the Jewish world, Jewish news, not quite as busy as other days and other weeks. Sometimes things are really swirling around the Middle East. Sometimes there's a lot happening in the Jewish world that we could just talk about day and night. But okay, yeah, I am on from 2 to 4. Someone's just telling me, did your time change on radio? You're not on anymore from 2 to 4. Sure am. I'm just going to write back. okay, just one quick news item. Let me scroll down to it. And it is, wow, it's that far down already. Okay, here we go. In Israel right now, there is some degree of controversy at the wall, the Kotel, okay, called by those outside of Israel the Wailing Wall, but otherwise just called the wall, the Kotel. Kotel means wall, or the Western Wall. And here's the controversy. When you go there to pray, and Jews come from all around the world to pray there, people, Christians come from all around the world to pray there as well. There's something extraordinary about a place where so many tears have been shed, so many prayers have been prayed for God's redemption. And it's the memory of being under judgment at the same time. It's powerful. I have very powerful times in prayer while there. And especially when you're surrounded by religious Jews praying often very fervently, and they're praying more fervently than you're praying, and they're crying out for the Messiah, they're crying out for God's redemption, or crying out for forgiveness. It's very moving. So when you go there, you walk up to it, and the larger area on the left, that's where the men pray, and that's where you'll have bar mitzvahs taking place on the Sabbath and different things going on there, special holy day gatherings. There, you'll have larger numbers of men there. And then on the other side, you've got this barrier. I don't mean a 100-foot wall, but you've just got a barrier you can see over on either side, and it's where the women pray on the other side. And that's natural because religious Jews have separated for millennia, men from women praying, all right? So, and in certain parts of the world today, in church services, men sit on one side, women on another. And in other cultures, men on one side, women in another, right? You ever see a picture of a mosque of the men and women praying together, kneeling down together? Obviously not. Okay. So there was going to be a plan, because there are Jewish groups that pray together, men and women, that there was going to be a section of the wall that there'd be a specific place where men and women could pray together. And they were going to go ahead with that, which actually I was surprised to hear that, because the Israeli culture is largely secular, and then a smaller percentage that's religious and a smaller percentage that's very religious. So maybe, you know, 20, 25% overall religious and maybe 10% very, very religious in the culture. But overall, 75% not religious, and they haven't made a move to change this yet. So I was surprised to see they were going to, but the very religious said no. They were going to block that. Now American Jewish leaders are saying, you got to do something. Prime Minister Netanyahu, you got to do something. This is a quandary, and I don't know which way it's going to go. We'll be right back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, and I am delighted to be with you today. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So again, any Jewish-related question of any kind, anything that ties in with any thing we talk about on a Thursday on The Line of Fire, glad to take your calls. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Okay, let's go back to the scriptures. Let us go back to the scriptures and let us ask the question, is there a connection between the promise to Abraham that God would bless those who bless his seed? That applies somehow until today. So let's just go through the progression of Scripture, all right? We start with Genesis 12:3. God says, I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Or him who curses you I will curse. There's debate about the translation there. All right, does that still apply? I will bless those who bless you. That's where it starts, Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. It now is reiterated. The promises that God gave to Abraham are reiterated in Genesis 18, 18, Genesis 22, 17, and 18. Now we get to Isaac, all right? Genesis 26, 3 to 5. So this time, there's a connection between the promise of what would become the land of Israel and the divine blessing. So this is God speaking to Isaac now, Abraham, his son Isaac. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and your offspring I will give all these lands. And I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and will give to your offspring all these lands. And in your offspring, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So because of Abraham's obedience and God's love for Abraham, he now makes an unconditional promise to Isaac. He doesn't say to Isaac, I will continue this only if you obey. I will continue this as long as you keep my commandments. No, this is simply because Abraham obeyed my voice. Abraham, listen to me. I will therefore do this. I made a promise to Abraham, and now I'm reiterating that promise to you. And what's the promise? That all the earth will be blessed through the seed of Abraham and now Isaac, and that he will give these descendants of Isaac, obviously physical descendants, physical land, he will give them the land. All right? So we now get into chapter 27, where Isaac pronounces a blessing over Jacob. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. You get that? This is Isaac's blessing over Jacob. Now, this is when Jacob was deceiving his father. And yet this, as Romans 9 tells us, was not because of any good in Jacob or any evil in Esau. It was because of God's sovereign choice that he chose to carry out his promises through Jacob. All right? And here's the promise renewed. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. And now God's Isaac blessing Jacob in Genesis 28, 3 and 4. God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham. Right? There it is, explicitly renewed. The land promise, and before that, renewing the promise, cursed is everyone who curses you, and blessed is everyone who blesses you. And then, of course, the land promise is renewed to Jacob elsewhere in Genesis. But I wanted to read these verses because they reiterate what was spoken to Abraham is now spoken to Jacob when he is in a state of deceiving his father Isaac, because this was God's sovereign plan. Cursed is everyone who curses you. Blessed is everyone who blesses you. So God would judge people based on how they treated Jacob and his offspring. Now, here's what's important. The promise is now repeated through Balaam. Balaam, the mercenary prophet through whom God spoke to the consternation of Balak, the king of Moab. Numbers 22:12. God tells Balaam, don't go to curse Israel. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. All right? They're blessed. Don't curse them. This is Israel in the wilderness. Israel in the wilderness was not particularly holy. Israel in the wilderness sinned, and the whole generation dropped. Everyone 20 years old and more, except for Joshua and Caleb. God said, don't curse them because they're blessed. That's what, why? Why? Because of God, not because of Israel. Yeah, but they sinned. Oh, has the church ever sinned? Have you ever sinned? Are you blessed because of your goodness or because of God's goodness? Are you standing strong today because you're so faithful or because God is so faithful? Why should it surprise you then that God deals with love towards Israel? Why should he only deal with love towards the church? And notice that after Balaam speaks his words of blessing, Balak says to him, Numbers 23:1, what have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and behold, you've done nothing but bless them. And then Numbers 23:20, behold, I received a command to bless. This is what Balaam says. He has blessed. I cannot revoke it. Could it be any more clear? What do you get out of this narrative here? What do you learn from it in the book of Numbers 22-24? That God has blessed Israel. Despite Israel's sin, that God has blessed Israel. That's why we're here. That's why we're regathered. That's why we have so much influence worldwide, that for better or for worse, because we are a blessed people. And with much blessing comes much accountability, and that's why we've suffered so much. So now notice this, Numbers 24:8-9. Are you ready? Balaam speaking in the spirit. God brings him, Israel, out of Egypt. Who is he speaking about? The nation as a whole, right? Not a believing remnant, the nation as a whole. God brings him out of Egypt and is for him like the horns of the wild ox. He shall eat up the nations, his adversaries, and shall break their bones in pieces and pierce them through with his arrows. He crouched, he lay down like a lion and like a lioness. Who will rouse him up? Are you ready? Blessed are those who bless you. I should say, excuse me, blessed. There's a difference between blessed and blessed. Blessed in Hebrew means blessed by God. Blessed means truly happy. So two different words. Blessed are those who bless you, and cursed are those who curse you. This is Balaam speaking by the Spirit to the nation as a whole. That tells me that the principle still applies to this day. Why? Because this is not given based on obedience to the Sinai covenant. This is based on the sovereign choice of God. Because he said Israel is blessed, period. That's why we're still here. That's why God judged the nations in the ancient world based on how they treated Israel. God blessed the nations or cursed the nations based on how they treated Israel. And I've shared this before. Derek Prince said it, and it's quite moving, actually, that here he is, a faithful citizen of the UK, and he's living in Israel, in Jerusalem, at the time of the rebirth of the nation. And he watched over a period of years leading up to the rebirth of the modern state of Israel after, as Great Britain increasingly turned its back on Israel, or in his view, made promises, broke promises, changed things, didn't live up to obligations, that the British Empire, over which it used to be said the sun never sets in the British Empire, that became smaller and smaller and smaller and less significant and less significant. Derek Prince believed that that was directly due to Great Britain mistreating the modern state of Israel as it was being regathered and rebirthed. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for being part of our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. This is Michael Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. Let me try to help my Christian friends, my fellow followers of Jesus Yeshua who are listening now and are saying, I just don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, Israel's been replaced. The church is, we're spiritual Israel now. Why do you keep talking about physical Israel? Let me try to help you think biblically, all right? So let's use this analogy. A Muslim comes along and they say that they have the correct version of the scriptures preserved in the Quran, and that the Bible is corrupted, and that Muhammad is the seal of the prophets, and you should listen to them, not to Moses in our Bibles or Jesus in our Bibles, but rather to Muhammad. Why do you exclude him? We exclude him because you recognize what God has done in history, that what God promised to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob through Moses, he fulfilled with Jesus, Yeshua coming into the world. And now Jesus warns us, don't listen to any false prophets. Don't be deceived. There's going to be a lot of deception. Paul warns us, others warn us, don't be deceived. And now if someone comes along and tells us that the revelation that we have is false, or that Jesus of the scriptures is not who we think he is. He's just a lesser prophet. He's not the Son of God. He didn't die for our sins. And they claim that Muhammad is the seal of the prophets. We say, no, no, no. Our books came first. We know what happened in history. And we can show you that what we have written precedes your so-called revelation by 600 years, and that what we have written is accurate. And when your so-called revelation comes and changes things, we reject it. Rightly so. And I'm oversimplifying. Well, you can't oversimplify. That's just so simple. Someone comes along and says, well, there's a third testament now. The church is really Islam. The church is really Muslims worldwide. And all of everything that it says in the New Testament about Jesus and the church, it actually means Muhammad and the Muslims. You say, you can't come and change that. Why should we believe it? Rightly so. So here, you have all of the Hebrew scriptures laying out God's dealings with Israel and God's promises to Israel, all right? If the New Testament now comes and says, that's all thrown out the window, that no longer matters. Now, because the final prophet is here, everything is changing, and physical Israel is no longer physical Israel. Physical Israel has been replaced by spiritual Israel, by the church. You'd have every reason to say, then you're a false prophet in saying that. Then the so-called final prophet is a false prophet. That's why many Jews have a problem with faith in Jesus, because their perception is that the New Testament throws everything out and starts with this brand new religion called Christianity, which is basically a Gentile faith with very few laws and regulations. That's the misunderstanding, as opposed to the Messiah came to fulfill that which was written in Moses and the prophets, to bring it to its completion so that there would be a people serving God of both Jew and Gentile around the world, that the promises would be fulfilled, that not only Israel would serve God, but Israel and the nations. But this fulfills the promises to Israel. It doesn't change the identity of Israel. So you say, no, but Paul says not all Israel is Israel. Israel's been replaced by the church. First, he didn't say Israel was replaced by the church. And all he's saying is there's a believing remnant within the nation. And that believing remnant within the nation is the one that has received the promise of the Messiah. But that's nothing new. There's always been a believing remnant in the nation while God dealt with the nation as a whole. And he shows that God dealt with the nation as a whole by quote after quote after quote through the rest of Romans 9, 10, and 11. But if Paul could just come along and change the meaning of Israel, or if Jesus could come along and change the meaning of Israel, then people would have every right to say, then we don't believe you, because you are now going in violation of what's been written. A traditional Jew just had this debate the other day. We'll point to Deuteronomy 13 and say, doesn't matter how many miracles your so-called Messiah worked, when he says follow other gods that we, our forefathers, haven't known, then we don't listen. Well, of course, our whole argument is he's not saying follow other gods, but that's how a Jewish person hears it. You know, this new God called Jesus, or this new Trinity or something like that. We have to say all we're saying is follow the God of the Bible. Let's just better understand who he is and how he reveals himself. But if Jesus came into the world and said you can now worship idols, Ten Commandments are passe, you can now worship idols, feel free to commit adultery, murder is fine, we now live in the age of freedom. If he said that, then what do you make of it? Well, then he would have been a false prophet. Exactly. So this idea that the New Testament can now come along and change everything, well, if it changed everything, then it's not the New Testament. If it fulfills that which God promised in under what we call the Old Covenant today, but if he fulfills that which was promised and builds on it, then that's wonderful. That's God, and we rejoice in that. So, yes, it remains true that those that bless Israel are blessed and those who curse Israel are cursed. It remains true. Yes, it does. I don't think you can just do it like push a button, just like with giving. There are many promises about giving, but you can't just push a button. Okay, I gave $100. That means I got $1 million back, or $100,000 back, or $10,000. No, you can't just push a button. But God does bless generosity. He does. And when you give in faith and with a heart of love, you see blessing come in different ways. Well, the same way, if you will bless Israel, so what does that mean? Well, pray for the salvation of the Jewish people. Stand with the Jewish people, recognizing that God brought them back to the land, and proclaim that God has brought the Jewish people back to the land. And then work with Israel for that which is in the best interest. Work with Israel and that which is for the best interest of all living in the Middle East. That's part of blessing Israel as well. But let's stand together and let's be a blessing to Israel. And please pray for me and for our ministry as we are on the front lines of Jewish outreach, on the front lines of reaching Jewish people with the gospel, on the front lines of helping Jewish people who are struggling in their faith, on the front lines of helping Christians who get confused with Jewish issues. And we are so excited that in the weeks ahead, finally, we will be shooting special outreach shows to air all over Israel. I'm talking about in Israel, in Israeli homes, with Hebrew captions, especially made for Jewish people. By the way, if you want to help support us in that endeavor, you could really hold my hands up, because it's going to take a lot of time and energy. Airtime is covered. Production costs in themselves in terms of a studio covered. But there's a tremendous amount of time, energy, effort that has to go into preparing the shows and recording the shows. I'd cover your prayers now, and your financial support would be a great blessing. Two more days, friends, when you stand with us and help us with a gift of any size. And yes, this is a way to bless Israel. When you stand with us and help us with a gift of any size, I want to send you a wonderful book, $17, 250 pages, Cult Shock by Dr. Mark Stengler and his son Mark Jr. on reaching Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. We've done it through the month of June. Your gift of any size, I'm sending it out as my gift. So pray, be generous as you can, but let us be a blessing to you as well. Go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You'll see a banner right on the home page for this special gift as you stand with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH. Did you hear about what happened yesterday? A guy in Arkansas rammed his vehicle into a Ten Commandments monument on the state lawn, allegedly yelling freedom as he did it. Apparently, he did it in Oklahoma in 2014, claiming this is a violation of church and state. In Hebrew, the Ten Commandments are called the Ten Words, by the way. But inscribed on stone and in many ways part of the foundation of our nation in my new book, Saving a Sick America, that comes out in September. I get into this a lot. In fact, it's amazing to see some of the things that the founding fathers said about the Bible and their view of it. It's quite extraordinary. And I quote some of it in this new article on ramming the Ten Commandments, in which I say this is a prophetic picture of the sentiments of a growing number of Americans. Their mindset is, we do not want the Ten Commandments in our midst, nor do we want the God of the Ten Commandments in our midst. So what this guy did, his destructive act, is reflecting the sentiments of many Americans. I mean, this is how they feel. Enough with God's laws and standards. Enough with his moral principles. Enough of this prohibitions of idolatry and adultery and murder. We'll do what we want to do, when we want to do it. And no law or God will tell us otherwise. In America, we must have no connection to its Judeo-Christian roots, no connection to the moral values of many of its founders, no connection to the scriptures which so influenced their thinking. This is how Americans feel these days. We'll worship created things more than the Creator. We'll be full of covetousness and greed. We want our idolatry. We'll have sex with whomever we want to, whenever we want to, however we want to. And if we so desire, we'll call these relationships marriage, and neither God nor man will tell us anything different. We want our adultery. We will kill our babies in the womb if we so choose, and anyone who defies our wishes will be trampled with derision and scorn. We want our murder. Yes, we'll do what we want to do when we want to do it. We declare ourselves free. That is the mindset. The reality is, rather than shouting freedom, this guy should have been shouting bondage, self-destruction, captivity, decline. Yeah, that, in fact, is the direction that we go when we cast off God's laws and God's standards. And the founding fathers were absolutely not trying to set up a theocracy. Absolutely not. By the way, I have an article on this, Ramming the Ten Commandments, A Prophetic Picture of America. Read it on my website, AskDrBrown.org. There's also a new video, The Jews Have a Divine Right to the Promised Land, on the website. So go to AskDrBrown.org. In fact, plenty of other resources waiting there for you. But in this article, Ramming the Ten Commandments, A Prophetic Picture of America, I take some quotes that I use in my book, Saving a Sick America. And what you understand is that the founding fathers did not have the mindset that they wanted America to be a theocracy. You had a ruling clergy, a ruling priesthood that enforced the Bible on the populace. Rather, they thought there was great wisdom in Scripture. Many of them revered the God of Scripture. And to the extent that the nation followed the moral standards of Scripture, it would be for the good of the nation. That's how many of the founders thought. I'll give you some quotes to this effect when we come back. And I'll try to get to some calls as well. 866-348-7884 is the number to call on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And yeah, I am really psyched to look at some video footage that was just sent to me, recorded in Israel. Just footage of people talking about Yeshua, Jesus, and Messiah, and redemption, and salvation. We sent a camera crew in with questions. Now I'm getting to see the answers. We're going to use this for outreach broadcasts. I can hardly wait. It's just downloading as the show goes on. Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. Okay, before I go to your calls, which I'm going to do momentarily, check this out. This is from our second president and first vice president, John Adams. Suppose a nation in some distant region should take the Bible for their only law book, and every member should regulate his conduct by the precepts there exhibited. Every member would be obliged in conscience to temperance and frugality and industry, to justice and kindness and charity towards his fellow men, and to piety and love and reverence towards Almighty God. In this commonwealth, no man would impair his health by gluttony, drunkenness, or lust. No man would sacrifice his most precious time to cards or any other trifling and mean amusement. No man would steal or rile or in any way defraud his neighbor, but would live in peace and goodwill with all men. No man would blaspheme his maker or profane his worship, but a rational and manly, a sincere and unaffected piety and devotion would reign in all hearts. What a utopia! What a paradise would this region be? Wow, that's the esteem. That is the esteem that these founding fathers, like John Adams, had for the Bible. And yet today, people literally ram the Ten Commandments with their vehicle, say, we do not want God's ways in our midst. That is the state we're in today. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. William, you're on the line of fire.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
As one who's a fulfilled Jew, I'm a little surprised and I'm confused when I heard you say something about a third gospel where they're saying Muhammad and Allah is in that, because I know going off of the Torah alone, there is no such mention.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So is someone out there trying to say that now?
No, I was making a point. Thanks for asking so I can clarify in case anyone else misheard what I said. My point was, if someone came along today and said that there's a third testament or a third gospel or a further revelation, and that Jesus is Muhammad, or that the church is actually the Islamic community, we throw it out because it violates the current revelation that we have. So my point was, if Jesus came into the world and violated the revelation that the Jewish people had, then they would have rightly rejected him. If he came and now threw out all the promises that God gave to Israel and said they're now null and void, and we're changing everything, then they would have known he's not the real Messiah. So that was my whole point, this whole idea that the promises God gave to Israel got thrown out, and we know it because the New Testament tells us, well, then a Jew could have said the first century, then the New Testament's not from God. That's the point I was making.
Yes, you are a wise brother. I'm so glad that you're in the Word like you are.
Well, thank you, dear brother. I appreciate the call, and I'm so glad you asked for clarification. God bless you.
Thank you, too.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Yeah, if something's not clear that I said, or maybe you got a piece of it, better to call and get clarification, right, if you can get through. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Ed in San Diego. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Brown. It's been a wonderful voice of clarity, and I've always had this question. If you take a question from a Gentile about Judaica, I've always wondered how Judaism justifies or reconciles the use of talismans like Hamza and such, and how does that mysticism justify with having no graven images?
Yeah, there have always been mixtures. And some things have, you know, for example, in Kabbalistic Judaism, in some forms of ultra-Orthodox Judaism, you'll have, you know, the evil eye is a symbol. Or there's a synagogue I visited in Jerusalem once, and it's painted kind of a blue-green to keep the demons out. This goes back many, many centuries. So superstitions get interwoven with things. And the ultimate issue, Ed, would be, is this being worshipped as a god? And the answer would be no. So that you might have mystical symbols or, you know, red thread in Kabbalah or different things like that, or, you know, the evil eye, and this gives you power over the evil eye. But it's not worshiping that as a deity. You might ask, when Solomon adorned the temple with all types of images there and angelic images, or the actual cherubim, right, that were made, that were in, over the Ark of the Covenant. So here you actually had graven images of angels, but they were not being worshipped as deities, and that would really be the defining issue. Are they being worshipped as gods in any way? If not, they're either part of pagan culture, part of superstition, or just things that were acceptable within Israel itself.
Okay, so wearing a hamza in, you know, as something to protect you from evil spirits, are you not putting your trust in the hamza instead of the spirit of God? I mean,
well, it's superstition.
I sort of understand.
Yeah, it's super. Yeah, these things are certainly superstition. Uh huh.
And so superstition can go hand in hand with Orthodox Judaism?
All kinds of superstitions make their way in. Doesn't mean it's ideal or right.
Right.
Orthodox Judaism is not perfect or pure in any way, shape, size, or form. It's got folklore and traditions and customs and all kinds of things. So, I mean, I was at the home of one very religious Jew many, many years ago, and he had a jar. And when he cut his nails, he put them in the jar, and there was something about nails. You weren't supposed to just throw them out normally. It's like, what in the world? Yeah, so there are superstitious practices that have entered Israel's history through the centuries. Some have been out idolatrous. Some have been more harmless. Here, look, when you go to an ultra-Orthodox area, say of Brooklyn or of Israel, and you'll see the men wearing knickers, okay? Some of the men wearing knickers and a distinct outfit. That's the way they dress as religious Jews, but that was the way they dressed in their community in Eastern Europe a few hundred years ago. And that was considered to be a very pious, godly community. So they take that custom and now they live it out. It's got nothing to do with Torah. I mean, except just being modest. But it's got nothing to do with the Torah. It's not like we can find a verse here in the Bible or a line here in one of our law books that says wear these knickers like that. No, not at all. It's just part of the way of life that was passed on. So in the same way, you do have superstitious things that get passed on. Yeah, I don't justify them. I don't partake of them. I don't practice them. And to me, that's getting in the realm of the demonic for sure. But are there certain customs like that? Yeah, of course.
I kind of equate it into the Catholic world of like wearing a St. Christopher's medal or something along those lines, or a Madonna or something on a chain. And those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Same kind of deal. Superstition that comes into various Christian traditions. And it, look, to me, ultimately, your bottom line is correct. It is a lack of faith in God. It is a lack of dependence on God's promises. So I need this extra little gimmick. You know, I need this extra little thing. I'm all for asking people to pray, hey, pray with me, pray for me. You're believing God together in prayer. I'm all for all of that. That's fine and dandy. But in terms of some little, you know, if I carry this pen with me, it's been blessed by the man of God, so it's going to be my lucky charm, you know? Or if you know, this talisman thing that's going to bring me, no, that is superstition. And yeah, Ed, I agree with you. It is a lack of leaning on God, a lack of trusting in God, somehow thinking that you need these little extras rather than saying, I've put my life in God's hands. He's good. He's faithful. And I'm living in the light of his commandments, so living under his light, and therefore I trust my life to him. And yeah, there are demon powers, but we're told how to deal with them scripturally. And it's not by wearing some amulet or you know, hamza or whatever else the thing is. But you do, again, when you really dig deep into some aspects of mystical Judaism and some practices in some ultra-Orthodox circles, you will find some of this real superstitious mixture. In others, you won't. But in some circles, you will see it. And a lot of it is folklore from the surrounding peoples that gets intermingled or based on some aberrant tradition that got passed down. So, yeah, not everything in religious Judaism is perfect and right. Otherwise, I'd be a traditional Jew. All right, thank you, Ed. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, William, you're next. Stay right there. I'll get to your call on the other side of the break. The Hamza hand is an ancient Middle Eastern amulet symbolizing the hand of God on all faiths. It is a protective sign that brings its owner happiness, luck, health, and good fortune. The Hamza hand has a wide variety of different spellings, which include this. And that is from the jewelryinfoplace.com. You find it in Christianity too. Superstitions.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
מן השעות והשניות והקולות באוזניות מן הכוכב על המגדל ומן הרוח לצידו והחבר שעל ידו אשר מרים
music, those words in Hebrew tell you it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on today's broadcast. 866-348-7884. Right after the show today, a little bit later in the afternoon, I am scheduled to be recording my final response to Rabbi Yisrael Blumenthal. We agreed to do a series of three 20-minute presentations on the real Jewish Messiah, posting them the same day at the same time. So, the same day, the same time, we posted our initial 20-minute presentation. That was what? How many weeks ago now? 6-8 weeks ago. Then, 1 month later, we posted our rebuttals one to another. Now today I'm going to be recording the response to his rebuttal. He either has or will be recording his response to my rebuttal. And then, 2 weeks from now or so, we'll both post them on the same day, same time, two and a half weeks from now. And then we'll have an hour on each side. Presentation, presentation, rebuttal, rebuttal, response, response. And this way we're really hoping that it will help people to see more clearly who the real Jewish Messiah is. And I feel good about things so far. I've got some real sharp, clear points to make in the rebuttal. So just pray for clarity, for God's gracious anointing on his truth as I record this later today with our team. If you haven't been following any of this, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and just search for Blumenthal. And you will see, okay, here's my opening presentation. Just look for, or search for Real Jewish Messiah, if you like. And then here's my opening presentation. Watch that. Then click on the link to watch his. Then watch my rebuttal. Click on the link to watch his. And then next is the response from each of us. And that will close this particular series out. All right, we go to Winston-Salem. William, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thanks, Dr. Brown, for taking my call. Just had a question because I've not got to read a lot of his work. I wanted to know if Josephus makes any mention of Saul of Tarsus, and if so,
no, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He doesn't. Oh, okay.
No mention whatsoever.
Curious.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
So for those not familiar with Josephus, Flavius Josephus was the principal Jewish historian of the first century. Others may have written, but their works did not survive. He survived the fall of Jerusalem, basically got accepted by the Romans, saved his own life, and became the chief historian. His Antiquities of the Jews and Wars of the Jews remain the primary source that we have for the history of that time, although we know it's not a perfect history. And he does make reference to Jesus, but the consensus of scholars is that in the later versions of Josephus that we have, it got filled in by Christians, that they added to what he actually said and made Jesus more exalted. But he certainly, from what we can tell, did reference him, so confirming the historicity of Jesus being here, as of course we understand. And also, he makes reference to Jacob, James, the brother of Jesus, as being highly esteemed by the Jewish people of his day. So that is verified in Josephus, but in all likelihood, the account where he so glowingly speaks of Yeshua, that was probably embellished, but he definitely does speak of him as someone standing out at that time. I think that's the best understanding. He references Jesus, but not in the fully embellished way that we have, and he recognizes the brother of the Lord, James, Jacob, but certainly no reference of Saul of Tarsus in any way.
Well, at least that's more proof then as far as Jesus as a historical figure.
So absolutely. Hmm. Yeah, in fact, William, Bart Ehrman, who's a world-famous agnostic and New Testament scholar, whom I debated, about 6 years ago on the problem of suffering, he wrote a book, Did Jesus Exist?, where he said, of course he existed. This is the famous agnostic, Professor Bart Ehrman, debunking the idea that Jesus didn't exist. And for those who say, where were the contemporary sources that talked about him? Well, number one, there are no major contemporary sources. You know, in other words, writing in, say, 30 AD, there are no contemporary historical documents that we have. The earliest thing we have is the Gospels. And also, this was not like news today. People were not reporting the news every day. A historian would gather sources over a period of decades. Then he would look back at the scope of history, and then he would write a history. So we do have historians referencing Jesus. We have them referencing him in a number of different ways, you know, a backhanded way, you know, where one, you know, Roman governor is talking about, they worship Christ as a god and so on. You know, how does he deal with these people? And others referencing him being crucified under Pilate. And what is generally accepted that scholars basically say you really can't argue with historically is that that he's a historical figure. Some of you listening say, of course he's a historical figure. I understand. I'm just saying from a purely secular, skeptical, historical viewpoint that he's a historical figure and that he was crucified under Pilate and that his followers claim that he rose from the dead. Those are the kind of non-negotiables. And then others will say, and that he had a reputation for being a miracle worker and was a Jewish teacher. Those things, I believe, also you can argue from just a purely historical backdrop. But then when you look at the reliability of the New Testament text, the reliability of the Gospels, you say, absolutely. Every good reason to take this seriously. And then we know him personally. He's changed our lives. We have a relationship with him. So even without the record, we know him, but it's because of the record that we first come to know him. And that's why God has so carefully preserved that for us in the Scriptures. And that's where we start with our faith based on what God has told us. And then we experience the reality of it in our lives, and it confirms the reality of what is written. Hey, thank you for the call. All right, friends, I'm out of time here. Do you have my app? You say, which app? Which app? The Line of Fire app. Do you have it? No? Well, then by all means, download it today. You got your iPhone handy, as long as you're not driving in your car. You got your iPhone handy? Or your Android phone, maybe you got a Samsung or another Android phone. All right, if it's Apple, go to the App Store. If it's Android, go to the Play Store and just search for The Line of Fire with Dr. Michael Brown. Search for that. You'll find it immediately, okay? And when you find it, just download it. It's free. And then wherever you are, anywhere in the world, literally, I've tried it in different countries recently. When the show is live, you just click on it and you'll say, listen, boom, and listen live. Crystal clear connection for 2 hours, wherever you are, out of radio range, doesn't matter. You say, I'd like to listen to yesterday's show. There it is. On last week's, there it is. You know, do you have new articles on the website? Boom, click, you're right there. I want to call your show. Click right there on your phone, just one button, click, you can do it. You know, I'd like to stand with you and support you. Right there, of course, we've got that option for you too. So if the app's a blessing to you, tell 10 friends about it or post it on your Facebook page or eBlast. Tell people. It's a great blessing. We want to be a blessing to as many of you as possible.